Paul, could we have that title, the first? Good, thank you. The first recorded Star Trek. What are you prejudiced about? I didn't say, are you prejudiced about anything? Anybody who claims they're free from all prejudice is not actually telling the truth, I suspect. So what are you prejudiced about? Most of us find it quite difficult to be really objective in looking at people, at ideas. And I'm going to suggest to you this story of the first recorded Star Trek is actually about prejudice and three different types of prejudice that we look at. And those of you who are worried about the times, I know we started a bit late. The first one is much longer than the second and third, so relax. We've had two examples, which are bang up to date, or in the last 2 or 3 weeks, of extreme prejudice. In our road, we've had two burglaries recently, and this has produced absolute neurosis amongst some people. And we've formed an app which everybody's been dragooned into joining, that we should all watch out, and that's nothing wrong with that, but it's become ridiculous. On the day before Christmas, the app came up. Oh, there's a shifty-looking character sitting in an unmarked white van outside number such and such. The guy's definitely a crook. So somebody responded, how do you know he's a crook? I know he's a crook because he looks like an Albanian or a Romanian. Horrible. Prejudice. But another example, which I find in some ways even more frightening, a very good friend of mine, somebody I know extremely well, has worked for more than 30 years as a mission partner in Africa, 15 years with YWAM. Now, Sally spent some years with YWAM, an excellent organization, Youth with a Mission. Sally saw the light when she met Yogya and joined in to serve, but that's another issue. But this chap spent 15 years with YWAM in Uganda and then has been in the Sudan for about 15 years with the Church Mission Society. And his son obviously was educated in the Sudan, at the cathedral school in Khartoum, and then came to England to do a degree, and then went back with YWAM to Egypt. And in Cairo, he met a very nice American girl who was also with YWAM, and lo and behold, they got engaged, and they wanted to get married. And the marriage was to be arranged in her home church in the US. Everything was set up, the dates were fixed, the invitations were sent, but he was refused a visa to go for 3 weeks to America in order to get married. The thing that really got me, the reason they refused him a visa, of course, is because he'd worked in the Sudan, and the Sudan is a terrorist nation. But he went to appeal, and at his appeal, he was asked just one question. Do you speak Arabic? Yes, of course, he said, I speak fluent Arabic. That's my job. I grew up there. Oh, if you speak Arabic, you're almost certainly a terrorist. Prejudice. I hope you're appalled by those stories. But I have to tell you that the story of the wise men would produce exactly the same kind of prejudice in the days of Israel. We just forget, we're so used to the nativity story that we forget how shocking it is. The first people who worshipped Jesus were shepherds, vagabonds, rubbish, the people at the bottom of the pile. And the second people who are recorded as worshipping Jesus were these magi from the east. The book of Daniel explicitly warns you against people like that. You don't trust astronomers and astrologers from the East. They are people who should be avoided. We don't know where they came from. We don't even know how many of them there were. Probably three, because there were three gifts, but we don't know. And the likelihood is that they came from Afghanistan or the west part of India or Kyrgyzstan. If they did, they'd have probably worn a hat like this and look right wallies. This is a hat from Kyrgyzstan, worn by a tribal chief. So there you are. If you see me wearing that, you should be respectful and not laugh. But the fact is, those wise men, to most of the people of Israel, would have been regarded as weirdos, people not to be trusted. Can we have the first slide, please, Paul? Matthew is challenging our prejudice against foreigners and non-believers. And that prejudice still exists today amongst many people. I even dare say most people. And Matthew is saying, look, the heroes of this story are wise men from the East. Astrologers, astronomers, it's the same thing in those days, not now, whom Daniel had warned were not to be trusted. So question, how do we treat foreigners, non-believers? How should we relate to them? And in the trauma that this country and others are going through at the moment over immigration, over Brexit, it's a highly relevant question. I answer it by looking at the Bible. What does it teach us? And Matthew has a recurring theme on this topic, which comes several times through his gospel. It's something which clearly he feels very strongly about. In this story, which he starts off at the beginning of the narrative, the heroes, the goodies, are the wise men from the East. Matthew chapter 8, Matthew tells the story of the Roman centurion who came to Jesus and asked Jesus to heal his servant, even though the servant was not there. And Jesus said, I haven't seen such faith anywhere in Israel. This is the highest possible commendation that Jesus gives to somebody who was a foreigner, a non-believer. Matthew chapter 15, you get the story of the Canaanite woman who wanted her daughter healed. And Jesus says, I have nothing to do with you at this stage. You're not my responsibility. You're a foreigner. And she said, even the dogs eat the scraps that fall from their master's table. And Jesus responds with the healing of her daughter. So what do we do today? How do we get over our prejudice against foreigners, non-believers? It does not mean that we water down the gospel. Jesus said, follow me. Not follow some vague idea, follow me. Jesus said, he who believes in me shall have eternal life. There's an unequivocal challenge to faith in Jesus, which comes again and again in Matthew's gospel and the others. But it does mean that we remember that all human beings are made in the image of God. And I believe as a church, nationally and locally, we need to come back and get hold of that and really think about it. All people are made in the image of God. I don't know if you've been to the Ahmadiyya Mosque in Morden. If you haven't, you should sometime. Go to one of their open days. In that mosque, they have a men's meeting, which meets once a month, and they get about 1,000 men. Not many churches get 1,000 men to a Bible study once a month. And in that mosque, they had a series of, I think it was 6 talks on man is made in the image of God. And one of those six talks was given by a very committed Christian who was invited by the imam to come and speak to his men. A great friend of mine is a retired policeman, and he now works as a street pastor, and he looks after a group of street pastors, something that we're very supportive of in this church. And he works in a northern town, not Rotherham, but a town like that. And of course, there's been a lot of hassle over the grooming of girls in those towns. And the imam of that small mosque in his town called together a prayer meeting on three consecutive weeks to pray about the grooming that was going on that he wanted to stop. It's a small mosque. It only holds a maximum of 200 people, about the size of this church. And 100 men turned up to pray against the grooming of girls in that mosque. The imam invited all the street pastors to come and be a part of the service. I don't want to go on laboring this, but I have to make a very important point. We as a nation are challenged by what's happening on immigration, on Brexit, and a number of other things. The Bible teaches us that all men, all mankind, is made in the image of God. I find it fascinating that the Queen, in her Christmas message, and the Archbishop of Canterbury, and Pope Francis, all made this the central part of their message this Christmas. I think the Queen got it absolutely spot on right. And let me quote from her speech on Christmas Day. Even with the most deeply held differences, treating the other person with respect and as a fellow human being is always a good first step towards greater understanding. So what causes a failure to have that respect? Well, often it's fear. Often it's ignorance. Often it's laziness. Are we guilty of those? I've been arrested twice in my life. Once in Nepal and once in Russia. And the reason for my arrest was the same on both occasions. It was caused by the fear of the border guard as I tried to get into the country. And very quickly, the guard fetched somebody more senior who was less ignorant, less fearful, and it was sorted out. So you'd be glad to hear, Adrian, I was released within about half an hour. Problem solved. But so often we respond with fear and ignorance. Our national newspapers are so often guilty of this. And we're not following the pattern that Jesus teaches us in his gospel, and which is one of the themes of Matthew's story of the wise men. But we have another prejudice that he challenges. If I can have the second slide, Paul, please. Matthew challenges the prejudice that favors political power. Herod is a central character in this story. This is not the Herod that officiated at a trial of Jesus at the end of his life. It's actually the father of that Herod. But Herod is a central character. And he's, of course, utterly dismayed by the announcement of the Magi that there's another king and we've come to worship him. That's the last thing in the world he wants. And if you read the story carefully, you'll see how Matthew deliberately contrasts the brutal power that Herod employs, the murder of the innocents, with the human defenseless baby and the parents without any standing or authority. It's a great temptation for all of us, I know I've been guilty of it, to seek the politically powerful, to find those with physical, human power when we need help. Jesus came and served among the weak and the vulnerable. We sung at our Christmas services earlier on about the servant king, somebody who did not rely on any kind of human power to get his own way or what he wanted. Somebody who was prepared to rely on God's vindication. And again, I'm quite open about this. It's a challenge to us nationally and locally. On what kind of power do we rely? How important do we see integrity, honesty, as something which should govern our national life as well as our personal lives? There was a very interesting article in my newspaper earlier this week, or last week now, written by Max Hastings, who was editor of the Daily Telegraph for a number of years. And again, I want to quote one sentence. Many voters throughout the developed nations seem untroubled that not only the chief of the Russian Federation, Vladimir Putin, but also the US President, Donald Trump, and the most prominent aspirant to British conservative leadership, Boris Johnson, are all proven serial liars. You know, I find that frightening. Proven serial liars leading not just the Russians, well, we expect that, but leading our Western countries. Matthew, as he relates the story of Herod dealing with the wise men, challenges our prejudice that favors political power, not the integrity, the defenselessness of the servant king. Integrity matters. Oh, we all make mistakes. We all get things wrong. None of us is perfect. But standards do matter. And it's the challenge to us as those who call ourselves Christians is to find out whether we're relying on that kind of spiritual power or political power. And the last prejudice I want to talk about, if we can have the third thing, Paul, please. Matthew challenges the prejudice that respects spiritually complacent religion. What did Herod do when the Magi came and told him they'd come to worship this new king? Well, of course, he gathered the religious experts. And they knew where the Messiah was to be born. In Bethlehem in Judea, they said. Now, Bethlehem is only 6 miles from Jerusalem. We went to a church service in Bethlehem. It took us 15 minutes from our hotel in Jerusalem to get there. Even on a camel, or even on foot, it's a couple of hours. Did the religious leaders go with the wise men to find this Messiah in Bethlehem? On your life, no. They sat on their backsides in Jerusalem, doing nothing. They are religious leaders, but they do not act on their biblical knowledge. Jesus is just a baby, and they take him for granted. I think we should be immensely grateful that in this country we have two archbishops who are both real men of God who proclaim the truth and are not spiritually complacent. But it's very easy still to fall into the trap of complacency. What Matthew is saying is that the sin of taking Jesus for granted is not the sin of pagans and unbelievers, it's the sin of religious people. People who knew their Bibles, who knew that the Messiah was to be born in Bethlehem. So there you are, there's the challenge for 2019. Matthew challenges the prejudice against foreigners and unbelievers. He challenges the prejudice that favors political power, not spiritual power. And he challenges the prejudice that respects spiritually complacent religion. I'm going to end with a very simple poem. It's one that probably many of you will know. I read it to myself every year in the first week of January because it's a good reminder to me. When Jesus came to Golgotha, they hanged him on a tree. They drove great nails through hands and feet and made a Calvary. They crowned him with a crown of thorns. Red were his wounds and deep, for those were crude and cruel days, and human flesh was cheap. When Jesus came to Borough Heath, they simply passed him by. They never hurt a hair of him. They only let him die. For men had grown more tender, and they would not give him pain. They only just passed down the street and left him in the rain. Still Jesus cried, "Forgive them, for they know not what they do." And still it rained that wintry rain that drenched him through and through. The crowds went home and left the streets without a soul to see. And Jesus crouched against a wall and cried for Calvary. Amen.